Welcome to Coinology, the podcast.
You ain't getting no money if you constantly worried about what everybody else got to say. If you constantly got your eyes on what everybody else doing, you ain't getting no money. When it comes down to closing a deal, I get you done. Every single one.
Welcome to Coinology, the podcast. Hey, welcome to another episode of Coinology. And I'm here today with none other than Dr. Angela Wright. Thank you, Dr. Wright. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited too.
I just want you to know you are an inspiration. You're super dope.
Thank you. Yeah, you're super dope. Thank you. You know, I have been following you online. And one of my clients had mentioned, she said, have you heard of Break Free? Mm-hmm. That's the name of your IG page. I said, no, I haven't. You need to go check her out. She's dope.
Oh, wow.
Right. So I went over and I started watching. And I think you had just launched your podcast.
Yes.
And then I started hearing about your story. I said, I got to get her in for Coinology, right? Because I said, she's doing some really dope things. So let's talk a little bit about you, Dr. Wright. So tell us a little bit, what is it that you do?
Right now, I have my nonprofit.
Okay.
And it's focused on, I don't like to say at-risk children, I say at-promise. Because I believe that as long as the playing field is even, all our kids can succeed, not mm-hmm. just those that come with a silver spoon. And it's just near and dear to me. So I focus on my nonprofit, also have the podcast, and I published a book as well.
So, okay, yeah. Okay. So where are you from?
I'm from New Jersey.
Okay, New Jersey. That's your boy then, Jay,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, I love Jay.
Yeah,
I love Jay. I feel like Jay is the lyricist. You know, it was times when what album was that? In My Lifetime album, where you would have to really replay something to really understand mm-hmm. what he was actually talking mm-hmm. about. Yeah, I mm-hmm. love Jay-Z.
Yeah, it's some of his music that I have to actually, I hear years later and I finally understand what he was saying.
Yeah.
Because he was such a forward thinker.
Yes.
Right?
Still is.
Still is. Amazing. So let's go all the way back. So you're from New Jersey.
Yes.
Okay.
Born and raised.
Two-parent household.
Okay. Father's a pastor. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. It was me, my sister and brother that were raised in a house together. My parents split maybe around the third grade, and we moved. My mom left, and we went to Florida to where her mother was from. And they ended up getting back together. We moved back to New Jersey, so that's where I grew up and where I went to high school. And then they ultimately got a divorce maybe about my freshman year of college.
In college. So yeah. Where'd you end up going off to school?
Here. Clark oh. Atlanta University. Okay. I'm a CAU alumni.
Okay, yeah. Clark.
Find a way or make one.
So it seems like, so you came from a household that was very focused on education.
Right.
And making sure you went off to school.
Yes.
Right? So you went off, Clark. How did you graduate from Clark?
Yes, I came out class of 2002. I graduated with a BA in early childhood education.
Okay.
And I went on to teach school for about 2 years.
All right, so children, that's always been
a passion
for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So 2002, you graduated, you went off to begin teaching.
Yes.
Right? Somewhere along the lines, at that point, did you have any children? Did you get married?
Yes, I had a child. Brad was my first son. And I had him actually, when I left to go to college, I went to FAMU in 95. When I first went off to school, I went to FAMU, but I was already pregnant and didn't know. And the agreement between me and my parents was I come back home and I have him. And when he turned one, I had to go back to school, that they would keep him. And I had to go finish my education. So I went home. Brad turned one. I left and I went to Clark instead of going back to FAMU. And
that's a big deal because your parents were ensuring that you had your education. You know, back in the day, parents would try to, punish you.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, well, you're not leaving here. You're going to have to stay here. You're going to have to take care of your baby,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Not knowing that what you're doing is furthering the problem
right.
by not letting the child go back off to school.
Yeah, and I mean, back then I kind of didn't understand it because who wants to leave their newborn child, right?
So why did you choose to move away and not go to school near?
Because I was already, Brad's father was in the streets. So I had already started dating drug dealers. you know, and I just felt like being at home, I was not going to stay focused. You know, being a city girl, living up north, it's different. I needed a slower pace, even though I still came to Georgia and got in trouble. But I just felt like it would be better if I went off, and I wanted to go to an HBCU. Originally, I wanted to go to Howard, and my parents said no. They said D.C. was too wild. I'm too wild to be in D.C., so they wouldn't let me go to Howard. So I went to Clark.
So you were always attracted to the fast life?
Always.
Always. What was it about the fast life that attracted you to
I think it was the power. And I correlated to my father being a pastor. And people who grow up into church, especially preacher kids, the congregation put the pastor on a pedestal as if he is God himself or the king, right? So you always see people gravitating towards the pastor, doing everything for the pastor, for his kids, you know, they don't like the wife, but they, you know, they love the kids. So I think I correlated the men that I chose to date with power, with having that sense. And to me, that's what drug dealers was. They control the street. They're street guys. And I loved everything about it. I was naturally spoiled as a child. So it wasn't like a man could come along and give me anything that I had not already received. It was just the power that I attributed to the power.
Did your parents know you were dating drug dealers?
Not at first, no. No.
So they didn't notice all the expensive gifts coming into the house?
Oh, I was a little Jacob. I was a deceiver.
Okay.
So, like, went the car, you know, to act in the 10th grade when I didn't even have license. I would park the car around the street and act like I came home on a bus, but it'd be around the corner, that type of thing. I just was really, really good at what I
did. You know what? You just brought back memories. I remember how that's just the way it was. Yeah. I remember seeing some of the young girls when we were in school, and they had the dopest. They had the back then it used to be the sobs and the acts and all you said. But like you said, they parked it around the corner, but they no one ever asked.
Nope.
It was amazing that nobody ever asked the question.
Yeah.
So, okay, the car was parked around the corner, but what about all the gear, the clothes, the jewelry?
I would change my clothes. And then see, too, like, I was spoiled. All of us were spoiled. So, like, my first door knocker pair of earrings my parents brought. My first Sherlin coat, my first fur coat, they brought all that. My first name brand, you know, bag, my parents brought it. Like, if it wasn't for Christmas, it was for a birthday or something like that. They naturally kept us, you know, well-dressed, my parents.
So do you think that in the black community, the fact that we do put so much onus on designer and glitz and glam, do you think that that also plays a part in the young girls being so infatuated by this fast life?
Yes, I think it plays a part. Wholeheartedly, I think it plays a part. And I think that my generation made it worse for the generation, for our kids. Like our parents, we still had certain boundaries, you know, like, kids these days, they don't even know what it is to play outside all day. They don't know anything about that. They don't know anything about coming into that, coming when they come in the house to speak to everybody that's already there. Or if grown people are talking, don't even come in here. Go to, you know, go the other way. And I say that our generation made the generation behind us a little worse.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I agree. So you became pregnant by a drug dealer. Was he one of the top ones in the city or just
in the town over? So I stayed in Lakewood, New Jersey, and he stayed in Freehold, New Jersey. And and then he started catching bids, going to jail, you know, at an early age, and just that cycle. And I remember, too, another reason why I felt like I needed to leave, because if I didn't, I felt like my life would have been stuck doing bids with him, because I wouldn't have left him. You know, I just would have been in and out of being that baby mom in a crowded visiting room with a baby, visiting, you know, wanting to hold your dude down. So I think that was another reason why I knew, like, if I want my life to change, I have to leave. I have to, and it's, I just had to put me, you know, me first.
So he was locked up, and that's when you decided to move to Atlanta.
Yes.
Okay. So you moved to Atlanta. He's locked up at that time. Your baby is with your parents. So it's pretty much like a fresh start on life, right?
Yeah.
So how did you end up meeting your new guy?
The guy you speaking of that I got in trouble with?
Yes.
I moved to Florida. Okay, so when a big indictment had came down in 2005.
Well, let's back up before we get to that part. Okay. It sounds like I'm missing a large amount then, right?
So, you are missing a larger part. So, being in school and being, I tell people, they say, how did you end up being around that lifestyle when you came down here fresh. But Clark Atlanta University in the campus was situated right by the projects back then. Mm-hmm. They've torn them down now, but John Hope Projects was right there. You had Vine City, then you had MLK around the corner. And I started out as the girl who would tell kids on campus where to go get weed from. Mm-hmm. And then it escalated, and I started hanging out with, like, the dude who owned the weed spot. And, you know, we would party. That was, like, my play brother. And then one thing just escalated and escalated to another till I found myself. I ended up counting money. Like, I used to get paid to count money and package it and seal it, you know, vacuum seal it and all that.
And all this is why you were going to school.
Going to school.
So you lived that true life, like, power. What's the power? It's the new version of power. Have you seen... Okay.
You know, because you know I was gone. Uh-huh. For all the power. I just came home 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so
that's
I right. missed it. Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, you are in college. You are actually still running a certain type of life. Parents have no idea.
Nope, they paid all my bills. I didn't live on campus. I never lived on campus.
Okay.
They paid my bills. I just had to, I was responsible for like my car payment mm-hmm. and just whatever, you know, whatever mm-hmm. Extra stuff I wanted to do. They mm-hmm. I didn't have to take out loans. My parents paid for me to go to school and everything, even though I would take out a loan and not tell them and get the refund check. Yeah, but and then I just found myself head first in this game, and it just kind of spiraled my life out of control to the point I wasn't even happy in a home that I had, you know, had built and everything. It was just like,
you had a home built
mm-hmm.
at what age?
I was 24.
And so at this point, your parents are just assuming that
the school,
and you made some great decisions.
Right, and that my boyfriend was into real estate.
Okay.
So it went from... The lie escalate. It went from construction to real estate, you know, and mm-hmm. everybody know that, like, real estate, they make really good money. He wasn't an agent. He was a broker, mm-hmm. real estate broker. And so that's what.
So they had no idea.
No.
Your son's with you at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
So and my mom has also moved down. We didn't live together, but my mother had moved to Atlanta as well.
So at no point they're questioning.
Yes. My father. He came back then, T.D. Jakes, Women That Are Loose. Mm-hmm. It used to be held at the Dome. So he would fly down and stay with me to go to that summit. And one day leaving, I was taking him back to the airport. He leaned up and turned the radio down. And he said, Ray Charles could see that something's going on. And I was like, oh, Daddy, don't start. And he said, I'm going to tell you this. He said, God said, whatever you into, you better get out. And I was like, I ain't into nothing, you know, just steady mm-hmm. line or whatever. But I didn't take heed to that. And then he called again. And this was a couple months later. And he said, I had a dream. And he said, one of y'all got pulled over by the police. And it was like the marijuana smoke was coming through the vents. And I was like, I don't smoke weed, so you probably need to call your other kids. But I knew what it was. It meant the stash compartments in the car.
Mm.
So God was giving warnings. I just was not taking heed to the... No.
What do you think led him to know that something wasn't right? Do you think he just had... You think it was just a discerning spirit? Or do you think you gave off some clues to him?
No, I think it was the spirit. Because even when doing trial, after it was over, my father asked me one day, he said, was all that stuff that they said about you true? And I was like, Daddy, them people was just trying to get their time cut, is what I said. But years down the line, when I came into... accepting responsibility and really understanding like what I did to my parents, to my community, I came clean and I told my father, like, yeah, Daddy, what they said was true.
Mm. Yeah. That takes a lot, because one of the things that I always talk about is self-responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And winners can look at themselves and say, this is my role in whatever it is that I've been able to get myself into.
Right.
Okay, so at this point, you have a brand new home in Ellenwood. Your son is there.
He's
in private school.
Yeah,
so you are living a really plush life for a teacher.
Right, right.
But you have the boyfriend that's quote-unquote the broker.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
All right, so then how do you meet the man that is going to change the trajectory of your life?
When I went to Florida. I moved to Florida because an indictment had came down in 2005 and a lot of my homeboys went to prison. And then another one came down in 2006. And it was just like, okay, I need to do something different. So I moved to Tallahassee, Florida, opened up a hair and nail salon. I called myself like, this is it. I'm done. I'm walking away. And that's how I met him. And at the time, Ebony, he was married. when I met him and I started messing around with him. Mm-hmm. And I know better. Mm-hmm. I watched women tear my mom and dad home up, and I always said that I would never do that. But people don't realize when you begin to dance with the devil, you start to do things that you said you would never do. Mm-hmm. You start to compromise who you are as a person. You compromise everything, your spirit. And he ultimately divorced her, and then he ended up taking a stand and testified against me.
Right. So, but that before we get to that part, because that part is devastating when mm-hmm. I read that part of your story. But you know, how large were you? What type of organization were you guys running?
Okay, so once I got down there, I opened up the hair and nail salon, and Brad was with me as well. He's in private school. So at first I was just living like the soccer mom life, you know, mm-hmm. always at all the events at school and everything. But then I realized, like, oh, they paying $24 a key down here, $24. And I could get it for $17.5. Like, that's easy. I'm not going to meet nobody. I'll just have him do it, thinking I'm smart. I always mm-hmm. felt like I'm smarter than everybody that's around me. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. So it was Tallahassee. Then it's like Quincy, Florida, Marianna, Florida, all of those towns right there, down to Alabama, Dothan, Alabama, and then Panama City. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was like, you know, we probably move one guy. I he's locked up now, so it doesn't matter if I say his name. Eric, I had one person who would get 10 kilos every 3 days. So that gives you an idea of the mm-hmm. the scope of the organization.
So you guys were running
yeah.
some things down there. So talk to me a little bit about the day that the feds came.
I was coming back from All-Star Weekend, and my son was in Florida. Mm-hmm. So the guy, he didn't pick my Brad up from school that Friday. And I was saying, oh, he just mad. You know what I mean? He mm-hmm. just mad at me. Why we leave him? So I called one of my friends and asked her. I said, Fanita, I need you to get Brad from me. He know how to get in the house and just keep him. I'll be back Tuesday. And I got back in town. He wouldn't answer the phone or anything. So I checked like his voicemail to see when the last time someone had called, and realized, I'm like, oh no, something had happened. So I asked his sister to go by our house. And when she went, I said, you see any cars that don't belong like on the street? And she said that it was a Charger, a navy blue Charger across the street. And I was like, oh no, no Chargers don't be in this development. You know, this was a new development too, a new construction home. And so I asked
her. So you had something in your gut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my gut. And then so, come to find out, he was locked up. The feds had got him. He hadn't called or anything. And so when I went to get Brad, I told myself I was just going to pick Brad up and get back on the road and come back to Atlanta.
So you thought you were going to be able to still run?
Oh, yeah.
You thought you were invincible?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I did. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. You know, and I tell people all the time that when you run with a certain type of dudes, right, and people don't bother them, the protection is on the street. And then I felt like I was covered by God too, not just from the covering that my father had over me, but even my pastor. I felt like God always sent a warning. So in my mind, I felt like nothing can touch me.
Mm. So even though you were dancing with the devil, mm-hmm. you still felt like God's covering.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. And I do believe, and I wholeheartedly even still believe that to this day. Mm-hmm. From times that one time we got robbed, you know, and they hogtied all of us. You know, they could have shot us in the back of, you know, they could have shot us execution style, anything. And then it's been other times when the police kicked the house in and just overlooked money or anything. Never no drugs in the house. But it's been a lot of times that God covered me. But I believe it was saying, you know, wanting me to get it right then and there and not have to go to prison mm-hmm. to get the
was trying, he was trying to shake you.
Yes.
Shake you.
Yes.
So you got on the road with your baby.
Mm-hmm.
And you had.
I didn't make it on the road.
Oh, no. You didn't?
Nope.
What happened?
They got me that morning. I didn't get on the road. I ended up staying there talking to Fanita and laid on her couch and went to sleep. And about 6 o'clock that morning, they was at her door.
So when they show up, you have no idea.
I knew it was for me. I knew it wasn't for her. She was at the door too. And she was like, I went open up the door. And then she was like, she called my phone. She's like, Ann, please. She's like, they gonna kick, you know, they gonna take my kids. You know what I mean? So I didn't want that, you know, want that to happen. So I opened up the door and tried to run. And of course they got me. Mm-hmm. And it was the worst, Ebony. The worst, not so much for me, but because to see Brad and my two little cousins, their mom was already gone. So we had them, we took care of them. To see the, like the anguish in their eyes and to hear them, you know, hollering and crying. You know, Brad's 10 at the time. Darius is 12 and Sarita is 14. Mm. So this is traumatizing to them to see me being taken away, all the guns, all the, you know, the hand, all everything, you know, and just being led in the back of the car. It that bothered me for a really, really long time. It ate at me because I already know like what it did to them as kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at this time, Brad is thinking mom is just a teacher.
He's thinking I'm a teacher, but when he came to see me, I asked him, did he know I was doing anything else? And he said, yeah. He said, you had a money machine, Mom. And I was like, well, how did you know it count money? And he said it was the same one from Bad Boys 2. So, you know, kids pay attention to things we don't think they pay attention. Mm-hmm. I never had drugs around them, but, you know, just the lifestyle. Brad had murals on his wall, you know, mm-hmm. of him back then, all his friends take him to Disney World, just the lifestyle that he was able to, you know.
And I'm sure that other his friends' parents probably realized that Brad was living a lifestyle that they didn't have.
Right, right.
I mean, you know, and it is probably conversations that's happening at the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Brad's school, so his core friends was like friends from the neighborhood, like where my aunt and them lived at. But the people that Brad went to school with were well off. You know, mm-hmm. back then, we talking private school, his tuition back then was $963 a month. And he went to Eagles Landing Christian Academy. So we know it's predominantly white. It
right.
wasn't a lot of, you know, a lot of people who, you know, African Americans that were in his classroom.
So yeah. When you were arrested, you weren't arrested in front of your neighbors?
No, I was arrested down in Florida at my friend's house.
Okay.
But it still made the
it
news.
It made the news. Yeah. So then everyone said, aha. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you probably heard all types of talk.
Of course.
We knew she was.
Yes. Da, 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 yes. Da, 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 da. Yes. And yeah. Once again, it wasn't that I was embarrassed for me. I was embarrassed for my mom to have to, you know, I was embarrassed for my father to have to stand up in front of his congregation. You know, I was embarrassed for my pastor, you know, here in Atlanta, just like, oh, they put her on a pedestal. They thought she was so smart. You know, now look, the one y'all put on the pedestal, the one that y'all thought was doing this, she really was doing that. So mm-hmm. that's where I was hurt for them and like embarrassed for them because I wasn't embarrassed. Yeah.
So then, okay, so you're arrested.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they want you to turn on whoever.
Right.
I'm sure they're offering you all types of deals.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying no way.
No.
You know, one thing I always talk about in here is I grew up during a period where there was no such thing as snitching.
Nope.
That wasn't even an option.
It's heavily accepted now.
And you can walk the streets known as a snitch.
And you come home.
You come home.
And they praise you. They give you money. They give you, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Nobody even talks about the fact that the reason why you got home so early mm-hmm. was because you snitched on someone. But back in the day, you wouldn't even really make, so it was, you wouldn't make it in the streets and you wouldn't make it inside.
Right. Yeah.
It's
changed.
It's changed
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
So you decided not to take the deal.
Nope. I wouldn't take the deal.
You didn't take the deal.
That first day when they got me, they didn't even take me directly to jail. They took me to a building. And I'll never forget, it was a Saturday morning. They had, like, cartoons playing on it. And I'm saying to myself, I don't have anything to tell y'all. Like, you know, we prolonging it. Y'all could just take me to the jail. They were so nasty. And I've never said this. They were so nasty. My cycle had came on.
Mm-hmm.
And they just let me sit there and bleed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you not take the deal because of the love for him or because of the code of the streets? Which was
no, it wasn't anything for him. It was just, I was raised as you get yourself into something, you take responsibility for what you did. Don't be a tattleteller. That's the way we were raised.
That's
as
right.
kids in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You don't tell on your brothers and sisters. Don't be a tattleteller. And I also felt like you big and bad enough to give a lick, you got to be able bad enough to take the lick.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't willing to tell. They wanted me to tell, like, on my homeboy. They wanted me to tell on my own cousin, my first cousin. And I just wasn't willing to do it. Mm-hmm. Did I think it was going to be 30 years? No.
So you ended up being given 30 years.
364 months is how they sentenced you. That's how the judge say the sentence.
And at that time, I know you're trying to count the time in your
head. I was like 12 going to 36 three times.
But the most devastating part, not only is the time, but then the person that you said, I'm not turning on, you find out he did turn on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's the one that was moving the weight.
For me. Yeah.
For you. For right. you. So you were really, so you were the boss.
Yes.
So you were the boss. Mm-hmm. So he was moving the weight for you.
Right.
So you wasn't that you were the like the Kimba store. Have you ever heard about Kimba?
I love Kimba's story, yeah.
Yeah, no. But so was it was it? Not no. like that. So you were not, so you were actually moving the weight and he was working for you.
Right.
So he turned on you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And not only him. Yeah, not just him, my own cousin.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the question is, what were they facing? How much time were they facing?
He had been in trouble before, so his mandatory minimum was automatically 20 years. Mm. Automatically. And they told him, like, you give us her, we'll give you 10. Because they had tried all kind of things, you know, sending women to the hair salon to try to befriend me. But, it, you know, it didn't work. But I knew. I got pulled over one time leaving Atlanta, going back to Florida. And they made me go with them, like, to this garage. And they had people come in and take the car apart like an assembly line and shoot this stuff through tires. Like, somebody had them believing that I transport drugs when I really did not transport drugs. And that night when I got home, I told them to come outside because at that time I was scared to talk in the house. And I felt like they had a tracker somewhere. And when it came out in court, they did. They had a tracker on one of the cars. And I told him, I said, it's not you they want. It's me they want. But they're going to use you to get me. And that's exactly how it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what's always kind of creepy to me mm-hmm. is that had you ever thought about the fact that somewhere in some office, there's a board. And on that board, your face was on there.
Right.
And there were meetings where they were discussing how are we going to bring Angela down.
Right.
Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had no clue that your face was on a board.
Right. And not only that, that tracking device, when they said that in court, I turned and looked at my mother like I knew it. And then I tried to put in my mind, like, when did they do it? When did they, you know, they're cunning.
Mm-hmm.
They're cunning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he turned on you.
Mm-hmm.
The others turned on you.
Right.
And you had, did they testify in front of you in mm-hmm. court? So
yeah.
You had to see your Judas in face on. Did you understand or do you understand why they chose to turn today?
Yes, I understand.
Have you forgiven them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. I forgive them. I don't choose to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't choose to deal with him, and I don't feel like I have to deal with him. Me and my father kind of go back sometime about this, and I tell him that God told us to forgive. That's what we're charged to do. We're charged to forgive. But he did not say, nowhere did he say that I have to be around him or even consider him my friend or anything like that. And I knew I totally forgave him because I used to say, yeah, I forgive him. But I knew I forgave him when their name could be brought up. And it didn't do nothing to me on the inside. Mm-hmm. My nose didn't start trickle mm-hmm. sweating or, you know, didn't wish no harm. And my own cousin, he just got in some more trouble. He was drinking and driving and he hit someone and they died. And, you know, any other person, if you hadn't forgiven, you'd be like, oh, that's what they get. That's karma. That's what they get.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I pray for him and hope that, you know, God does, you know, have him. Yeah, of course, he might have to do some time, but I pray it's not the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. If the tables were turned, would you have turned them in? Because you got to keep in mind, you were the one they were going after, right?
Right.
You were the head honcho.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have to save yourself from going to prison for 20 years? Would you have turned on that person?
No. Mm-mm. I wouldn't have did it.
Mm.
No.
You know, one of the things I will tell you that's deep is the forgiveness. You mm-hmm. know, like you said, it's very easy to say you must forgive. But the moment that you really forgive those who have hurt you to a point.
You're about to make me cry.
of transgression, I will tell you, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember. The thing that turned it for me, Angela, was I remember saying, I thought that forgiveness meant, like you said, I just won't deal with you.
Right.
I won't talk to you. And I can walk in the room with you. And I'm a Cancer. So Cancers can walk in the room and act like they never knew. In my mind, forgiveness was you were dead to me.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You did me wrong. The fact that I'm not all up on you.
Right.
And I'm letting you still breathe. You were dead to me, and that was forgiveness. And I realized when someone pulled me to the side and said, no, Ebony, that's not forgiveness.
Mm-mm.
That's not forgiveness.
Yeah.
And then when I was able to come to grips with, thank you, Jesus, for what you did to me,
mm-hmm.
it hurt at that moment. But had you not done that to me, this, that would not have happened in my life.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And to the point where, like you said, I don't want you back in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But if I saw you today, I would embrace you and say, thank you. Thank you for the pain. Thank you for the betrayal. Thank you for it all. Because I am where I am today because of you.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you are told, the judge says, how many months again?
364 months.
I think at that moment I would have passed out.
I didn't. I was quiet. I turned to my mom and I'm like, who is he talking to? Because I could not believe it. I'm a first time.
I would thought days. 364 days. Months.
Months. Months. Yeah, months. And I you know, too, I guess I was in delusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I felt like I'm educated. I'm a first-time nonviolent offender. I've never been in no trouble. Like, I was thinking at the most I would get 10 years.
Why
or,
did they
or
give
maybe
you so
five,
much?
The amount of drugs. So in the federal system, the judges are bound by guidelines. It's a sentencing table.
Mm-hmm.
So my level was a 39, with like going up the top. And then that was I got in trouble for 154 kilos. Even though they only had 11 in the courtroom, but they don't care. They'll take whatever you said you brought from me. They're going to write that down to run the time up.
Mm.
So that's why they gave me, it came out to 324 to 405. And the judge sentenced me in the middle and gave me 364.
So that moment, you hear the time, they immediately take you away. Mm-hmm. Look back, I'm sure you see your mom and your baby for the last time.
My son, I told my mom not to bring him.
Don't bring him.
No.
But I'm sure your mom and your father were probably like, what is going on with my baby?
Right. Yeah. And you know, I tell people too, that was another hurtful time. That week during court, I remember turning around looking at my father one day, and he's naturally dark skinned, but the countenance of his face was like sunken in, and it was red, you know, red. And no lie, my mom went from like a size 14 to like a size 8 within a, you know, and I just seen just the devastation that it caused, you know. And it's a joke now that I'm home. My sister said that every time you turn around, my mom used to be like, oh, I don't know, I just got a head, like, I don't feel good. Da-da-da. She said, since you came home, your mother ain't had one ailment.
Well, you know, because I could only imagine,
mm-hmm.
you know, not knowing what's happening to her baby day in and day out, because I hear it's no joke in there.
No, it's not. It's not.
No joke.
No.
No joke. So you are now, your first night you're in, and you...
I cried myself to sleep.
Yeah, you got to count it down, right?
Yep. I cried myself to sleep that first night and the next night and the next night under the covers. And then I would get up in the daytime like everything is, you know, everything is fine, because you can't appear weak.
Right.
And then this is not, I felt like a fish out of water. I had never been in no trouble. So to be thrown into, just imagine your space, right?
Mm-hmm.
This room and that, all of it. Just mm-hmm. imagine it. Lying with a bunk bed, 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 a bunk bed. Just imagine.
No privacy.
No privacy whatsoever. The showers had a shower curtain. The showers were private, but you wake up, you go to sleep looking at people, you wake up looking at people, you all are housed, right? Like this much space is from the next bed, how we sitting right here. And that just was, it was so weird to me. It was strange. And that first week, I just cried myself to sleep at night.
Mm.
Yeah, I cried myself.
So did you ever just get to a point where you just said, you know what, this is my life, and I'm going to make the best of this, and you just come into grips that this is it? Or in your heart, did you know, I'm not staying here?
In my heart, I never accepted it, to the point that people that did time with me, they used to think I was crazy. I changed my name to Free. I always watch sports and news all the time, still to this day. I studied everything. I wrote the Senate, the entire Senate, more than once. I used to sit every Sunday and write the president. Every Sunday.
But what would you say? Because you were actually, were you there on queenpin charges?
I was there on leadership role.
Leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. When you were writing to the president, what were you asking them to forgive you on?
I was asking them to have leniency, that our drug laws are draconian in America, period, point blank. Nowhere else, no other country do drug dealers get that amount of time. And I always...
And you don't feel like drug dealers should get that much time?
No.
Why
first
not?
Time nonviolent offenders?
Why not?
Because you didn't kill anybody.
Well, you did not put a gun to somebody's head and pull the trigger. But the usage of drugs have killed people. So So you don't know if someone who
purchased. Yeah, that's true. That's right? true. Yeah.
You don't know that. So, okay. You, the first president that you wrote a letter to was who?
President Obama.
President Obama, and he said no.
He didn't. Yeah, my clemency got denied. But I would write. I wasn't. So filing a clemency is different than just writing a letter. I would send President Obama Christmas cards. I would send the kids birthday cards. I would send card, you know, everything. And I just was telling him that I do believe that I deserve to be in prison. I just do not deserve 30 years.
So do they respond?
I got one letter from President Obama and I still have it.
And you think it was him who wrote it?
I don't know if it was. It probably was one of the aides.
Okay. And yeah. What exactly did he say?
That time when I wrote, I was writing about the conditions of solitary confinement and how it's inhumane because I had been in solitary confinement for 17 months. And that solitary confinement. Yeah.
That would make somebody lose their mind.
A lot of people did lose their mind.
17 months.
17 months, day in and day out. It's 24 and 1. You could come out for an hour Monday through Friday, and but you in a room like this, and you could just see the sky. But it's like it's no sense in going out. So basically, I was locked down 24 hours a day.
And so you wrote him a letter, mm-hmm. and his response to you was
about that he would have his officials to look into it, and that they would change. And they did change.
Oh, they did
stuff about solitary confinement when it concerned women.
Okay, they yeah. did. So yes. You did see a change.
Yes.
He did not ignore Mm-mm. the fact.
Okay. Nope.
So that was the first letter you wrote, mm-hmm. right? Second letter was to who?
The second, when the other term came in, President Trump came in.
Okay, to President office. Donald J. Trump.
Right.
How many letters did you write him?
I wrote every Sunday. Every Sunday from when he came in office.
So did you get any... So. The first letter, was there any response?
No, I never got a response. I never got a response from the president himself, from President Trump. I never got a response. So what he ended up doing with Kim Kardashian, Van Jones, Senator Cory Booker, all of them, they came up with the First Step Act. And Trump signed the First Step Act into, you know, he made it.
What exactly does that entail? Explain what that is.
Okay, so the First Step Act, it was a lot of... The First Step Act is huge, but for one, it gives more good time. It says how the clause that I ended up coming home on was that if you had extenuating circumstances, something, because before under compassionate release, it had to be that your primary caregiver was dying and no one could care for your child, or you yourself was dying. But he broadened it a little more to extenuate, and I argued that my time. That
so
my time was
how did you
unusual.
Fit into that, though?
Because I said that my time, if I was sentenced, okay, too, another thing that had happened under the Obama administration was the laws changed for crack and cocaine, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and so let's talk a little bit. That crack cocaine, and a lot of people don't want to really deal with that, mm-hmm. which was put into place by the Clintons.
Right.
That gave cocaine less time, cocaine possession less time than crack possession.
Right.
So you were arrested on cocaine or crack?
Cocaine.
Cocaine.
The indictment was both, but when it came down to it, I didn't sell crack. I didn't sell crack. So it was just the cocaine.
So like when you say crack was whack.
Yeah, crack definitely
was crack whack. Crack was whack. So now we're at the point of... They changed the laws about crack and cocaine. So how did that benefit you, though?
That part didn't necessarily help. But I argued that if I was sentenced today, mm-hmm. that I would not receive as much time as I did back then. Mm-hmm. And then also, I can't take away from the Obama administration. Under his administration, they created all drugs minus two. So that brought me down two levels. And what that was a reduction in the guidelines. Remember the sentencing table I was telling you about? So it took me from a level 39 to a level 37. So that brought me down to 21 years and 10 months.
So when a lot of people say, what did the Obamas do for... Mm-hmm. our community. And that's not saying that everybody that's locked up means African-American community.
But it is a lot.
The reality
yeah.
is not necessarily about giving you a free check.
Mm-hmm.
It's about changing legislation
right.
that was unfairly done to a majority of people who look like us.
Right.
So you saw that actually happening in your own life.
Not just my life. I seen women who had life. Life was never supposed to go home, but went home under the Obama administration.
Okay.
You know,
and so people don't talk about, because no. a lot of people who had life It was under the laws that were put in place by the Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because it's not politically focused for me and not by the Democrats or the Republicans.
Right.
But there were so many people who wanted to believe that Clintons were the first black president.
Exactly. That's what a lot I never knew that. Enlighten me.
Yeah. They used to say that Bill Clinton was the first black president because he played a saxophone.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so.
And because he said he inhaled, but he didn't.
And he
was
cool and all that. No, the inhale and didn't, that was Obama.
Oh, okay, okay.
Obama was the one who smoked, but didn't, he didn't inhale.
Okay.
Okay. But then we saw that there, that's when the jails were then privatized, mm-hmm. and it became a business.
A billion dollar business under
mm-hmm. the Clinton right. administration, okay? I want to mm-hmm. make sure. And then there was also the legislation of the cocaine and the crack.
The 1994 crime bill as well.
Underneath yeah. the Clinton right. administration.
That President Biden now says he's wrong because he helped write that bill.
Yeah, yeah. He helped write yeah. that bill. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to that.
Yeah.
President Biden was a part of writing that bill.
And that's why I feel like Biden, of all people, should do more for the prison system. That's just how I feel. Mm-hmm. If I know that, I always say I used to be a part of the problem, but now I'm a part of the solution. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do everything that I can to turn this generation mm-hmm. around, to deter women from going down the road that I went. So I feel like President Biden, you've already admitted that you was wrong. So why are we not doing anything to correct it? Why do we still have people in prison for marijuana with life sentences?
And now marijuana is legal in so many places. But let's go back. Mm-hmm. Okay. So under your situation.
Right.
So under Obama's administration, that automatically brings you from 30 to 21 years.
21
right?
years, 10
so
months.
So then how did you continue to fight that under the Trump administration?
I started to file for clemency again because under the Obama administration, I just knew I would get it because they had put out the attorney. They had five criteria. I fit all five criteria.
But so the day that you found out you didn't get it under Obama.
He was getting ready to leave. I was devastated. Devastated. Senator Cory Booker had wrote a letter of recommendation for me. Rick Durbin.
You knew it was in the bag.
I knew it was in the bag.
It was in the bag and the day.
I was sitting back like this, like, oh, it's
all. And so when they named off all the folks who received clemency,
mm-hmm.
and your name was not named.
My name was on a denial list.
Oh, my gosh. So how you at that point, how did you decide that you were going to continue to still fight? Because so many people, Angela would have said at that moment, I guess I'm just here.
Oh, no. I couldn't accept it. I could not accept it. So when I came down to 21 year, 10 month, I had already been in 10 years. So worst case scenario, I used to tell myself, okay, with the drug program and, you know, I don't get in any more trouble. Mm-hmm. I have 5 years mm-hmm. left. That's the way I used to look at it. And but I still continue to fight. And at first, I'm not going to lie, when Trump won that day, I was sad because I was like, there's no way he's going to do anything for prisons.
So why, let me ask you this. Why did you assume that Donald Trump was going to do nothing for the prison system?
Just by the way he talked.
By the way he talked or by the way the news portrays what he says?
No, by the things that come out of his mouth.
So what did you hear him say that made you feel as if he wasn't going to do anything for you?
He made a comment one time that drug dealers deserve, they deserve to have life in prison.
Okay. So when you heard that, you then said, I'm not going nowhere.
I didn't think he was going to. I didn't say I wasn't going to go anywhere. My hope still was like maybe the sentencing commission, because the sentencing commission, they have the power to change things on the sentencing guideline without Congress. So I was still hoping that, you know, that was happening. But it did not stop me from filing for clemency. I still okay. filed.
So you filed how many times under Donald Trump?
Twice.
And then the second time you filed for clemency, your name was on the list.
No, I didn't get clemency. I filed a motion to the court under the First Step Act. Remember when he signed the bill? I filed under that. And they granted it. And to time served.
So technically speaking, it was not Donald Trump that released you.
Yes, it was because he signed the bill.
He signed the bill.
Right.
So you attribute your freedom to former President Donald J. Trump.
Well, I attribute it to God.
To God.
But I say he used
Donald J. Trump.
Yeah,
have you ever had an opportunity to meet him?
No.
Mm-mm. Do you have a desire?
I would like to sit down with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
What would you like to talk about?
I would like to talk about just, first of all, that he did help a lot of people, because he did sign we already know he signed a lot of clemencies.
Which he did not have to sign.
No, he didn't. No, because that wasn't his fight. Mm-mm. He doesn't understand it. He didn't come from it. Mm-hmm. You know, and he can just look at us like, oh, they're horrible. They're animals. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. So that's what I would like to sit down with him about. But I would also like to talk to him about just some of the rhetoric that he pushed. Because he doesn't have to do it. I don't like the division that Trump, I don't like that division. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that you feel like it's okay to use certain language towards women when you have a daughter, a beautiful daughter. So why would you want to say things like it's okay to grab a woman by her, you know what? Mm-hmm. You know, why do you want to say, you know, pick at kids who are mentally challenged, that type of thing, when you don't have to do that?
But, you know, there is no perfect person.
Right.
Because
right.
The same token, like you said, you would like to sit down with President Biden and have a conversation with him about being more forceful.
And I would like to sit down with President Obama and ask him, why did you leave me there?
Right. So there's so many different things.
Yeah.
There's a President Obama. Mm-hmm. There's a President Trump.
Right.
And then there's a President Biden. But President Trump freed you.
Yes, he did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if the Republican National Convention called you today and said, would you come and speak on behalf of what Donald Trump did for your life, would you do it?
I don't know about it. I don't know about that.
He freed you, though.
Police officers need to be treated the same way a civilian would. If you take somebody's life wrongfully, then you need to go to jail.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So let me ask you this: is he saying that no matter what a police does, they will be immune to any charges?
His exact words were he wants to grant full immunity to police officers. Mm-hmm. Those was his words. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not the type of person that sit up and watch MSNBC or NBC or, you know, and don't watch Fox or watch Fox and don't watch the other or pay attention to what people. I feel like this. When a person says something out their mouth, that's what I'm taking for face value. Mm-hmm. No one else can. The media can't turn me this way or that way. I'm going by what that person say. Now, if he needs to go in and maybe correct or explain more of what he means by that, mm-hmm. then okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for you, that part, because I'm sure you probably saw the mistreatment done by COs and so forth.
Oh, God.
Behind bars.
Yeah, and that's another, that would be a whole, that's a whole other topic.
But he freed you, Angela.
God How used can you, him. God freed
used
me.
Him,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. But he can always say, I freed her. Just like there were some African-American young girls that he had at the Republican National Convention this year that are students at HBCUs. Mm-hmm. And they said that Donald Trump was behind providing funding to their universities so that they can continue to go to school.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's always the good, there's bad on both sides. But so you would not make a statement. This man freed you.
I would make a statement about the First Step Act. I would make a statement about the First Step uh-huh. Act, but I would not, I'm not going to tell somebody how to vote one way or another.
No, never yeah. that. Yeah. But the same person that you would be for, mm-hmm. which on this case would be Biden, which is now Kamala, was a part of writing the act that sent
ultimately
you away for almost 30 years.
Right.
Okay. You actually served 14.
Right.
That is a large amount of time
yes.
to serve. You served 14 years. So when you missed
everything.
Everything.
Graduation.
Everything.
Yeah. Prom.
Everything.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
were just released in 2021.
Right.
Under Donald J. Trump.
Right.
Today we're sitting and you have on Vice President Kamala mm-hmm, shirt, mm-hmm. which is telling. And at the same token, you know, there's a lot of accusations about Vice President Kamala and her stance on the prison system mm-hmm. as a prosecutor and district attorney and things of that nature. What are your thoughts on that?
My thought is this, you know, people get upset, you know, and they say, oh, she was responsible for locking up so many black men and da 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 da. But when you go look at the numbers, did she lock up more than any other prosecutor locked up? Was she any different than any other prosecutor? And what people fail to realize is I'm not oblivious to the law. I broke the law. Mm-hmm. I had to go to prison.
So you know that you should have went to prison.
Absolutely.
Right?
I just don't agree with the time that they
said. How much time do you think you deserved?
They could have gave me 10 years.
You think 10 years?
That's a mandatory minimum. Give me 10 years and let me come home in 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But then give you 10, let you come home in 7. That would have been what you would have liked.
I really would have liked 5, came home in 3.
Yeah. However, mm-hmm. you would have more than likely been back out in the streets.
Yeah. Right. I agree with you.
I bet you now with what you went through, you're less likely. Now, there
re-offend.
Are some people who will reoffend because mm-hmm. they have no other choice. Some mm-hmm. people feel as if, well, I can't say they have no other
choice. They don't have no other choice. They don't want to. And I just said I was going to make a post about this because this girl was in my DM and, you know, just feeling like I have it all together, right? And mm-hmm. she went to prison too. And, you know, she was just saying all of this stuff. And I want people to realize, felons, I said I was going to say, you cannot stop looking for a handout. Stop looking for a handout from people. Stop looking for it because it's not going to come. You got to work and you got to grind. It's times that I'm so tired, Ebony. When I get into bed and lay down and go to sleep, I sound like 3 big grown men with sleep apnea.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You understand what mm-hmm. I'm saying? People don't know. Like, yes, a 9-to-5 outside of everything else that I do because I'm not looking for a handout and I know I'm not going back to prison.
But you also know as a felon,
mm-hmm.
it's you got to find your own way.
Yeah.
So
you do.
That's the other thing that people have to figure out, too. While you're locked up, you're thinking in your mind, when I get out, what am I going to do?
But see, a lot of people sit in there. And that's another thing that kind of separates me from people. I never believed that I would be there all that time. So I didn't sit and just waste my time in the TV room watching reality TV shows and junk TV. I didn't do it. I planned. Mm-hmm. I wrote that book in prison. I plan, and I used to say, this is what I'm going to do when I get home. And in order to, what is it, poor preparation leads to?
Yep, yeah. Poor performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to start a plan. I tell people all the time when I used to mentor some of the younger girls that came into prison, once I got myself together, because it took me about 8 years to get myself together in prison, and I would tell them, don't look for these people to rehabilitate you. They're not going to do it. Prison is not designed to rehabilitate nobody. It's up to the individual.
But when you say get yourself together for 8 years, what do you mean? What did you have to
do? Oh, I was caught up. I started hustling in prison.
So you were still out there behind bars.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what made you stop hustling while you were in prison?
I was coming down from the chapel one day, and the way that Tallahassee prison is set up, it's like it's a rectangle almost, so you could see from the front. And I was coming down, and it made me think of the children in Egypt, you know, the children of Israel in Egypt. And I told God, I do not want to wander in this place for 30 years.
Let me say something. So it took you 8 years. So mm-hmm. those first 8 years, you were still hustling.
Mm-hmm.
So had the justice system only given you 5 years.
That's why I disagreed with you 5 years ago. Yeah.
You had not learned a lesson.
Mm-mm.
So Obama not releasing you too soon
was a blessing in disguise.
So we have to also understand that the
sometimes
incarceration, we don't want to lose our loved ones. Mm-hmm. We don't want to lose that. But it took 14 years for you to be sitting right here
mm-hmm.
to know that you will not ever reoffend again.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
So the question is, when they say the justice system is broken, is it really broken?
That's a good question. Now, that's a good question. All right, Ebony, now that's a good question.
So is it? I really want to know that because mm-hmm. I think it's not giving us what we want.
Mm-hmm.
But if we get what we want, there's no transformation.
Right. I still say it's the individual. Mm-hmm. I still say it's the individual because you have to have a mindset that enough is enough. You have to have the mindset that I'm done. Come hell or high water, I'm going to do things the right way. And I don't feel like the justice system can do that. It has to be up to you. You have to make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just made that choice. Like, I'm mm-hmm. done. I'm not hustling no more. I'm not getting over on, you know, the CEOs, you know, because I did, mm-hmm. you know, had CEOs bringing everything into the prison except the kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And And it was just like easy. And I always say that God gave me a gift. I know I have a gift of people gravitate towards me. Mm-hmm. I know that. But I used to use it in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And I look now and I remember like repenting to God, telling him that, you know, to forgive me for leading all those people astray. Mm. Leading all those people astray. Mm. Leading them in the wrong direction.
Who are the people?
Little girls who looked up to me.
So the little girls that you said, hey, let me show you another way. So you're taking on the responsibility that there were young girls who looked up to you, Angela,
mm-hmm.
and joined the game. And now they're living a life of whatever.
Right. I failed them. And then even too, you think about the young girls that was in church, that go to church. They always say, oh, I like your shoes. Gravitate, you know, mm-hmm. but not knowing that's leading them astray. That's leading somebody astray, whether mm-hmm. you directly or indirectly. And even once I got into prison, moving the way that I was moving, that was leading people astray mm-hmm. who was paying attention to me,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah.
So, because their rehabilitation wasn't happening either because mm-hmm. they trusted you. They're mm-hmm. saying, she has it all together.
Right.
I'm going to follow
right.
her lead.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I like what she do or how she do it, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
So do you keep in contact with any of the folks still locked up?
Yes.
You do?
Absolutely.
So what is your mission with them?
To just, you know, guide them through until they could get on this side. I only have one person left. J-Bo can't really say he's about to come home, but my one friend, Max, she's still in there and she was 16 when she went in. They held her until she turned 17 as an adult and tried her as an adult. They gave her 24 years. She's been in 13, but she has it was a body on the case and the drugs. So they gave her 13 for the body and, 11 for the drugs. Mm-hmm. So just trying to help her and really trying to get through to her because she's in that space where I was, you know, telling her, like, it's not worth it. Stop going to shoot. Stop getting locked up. Stop, you know, stop hustling. Like, if you think that them people are going to let you out and you have not changed, that's not going to happen. And another thing that I realized, too, Ebony, that I felt like God did not allow those doors to open until I truly forgave the people who had did me wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like that was part of my freedom as well.
And have you seen them since you've been released?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. Well, the guy, one of my homeboys FaceTimed me and is like, somebody want to talk to you.
Mm.
And he put him on the phone and I'm not going to lie, I didn't take it well. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't take it well. He was saying he had some money for me, but I don't want your money. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't want your money. And I blocked my homeboy who called my phone and put him on the phone. But I haven't seen my cousin.
So yeah. Your homeboy, you felt like he should have known better?
Yeah. Yeah. You should have known better. I don't have anything against him, but what makes you think I want to talk to this man?
Sounds like he's trying to say, I'm sorry.
Because
you just said earlier that you understood why he did it.
Yeah. But he didn't say that. His words.
Well, him saying, I got some money for you, is his way of saying, I'm sorry.
Oh. Yeah, I don't want the money.
What do you want from him? What can he do?
Nothing. I don't want anything from him. I just want him to continue to live his life and let me live mine.
So in your heart, you feel as if what with him?
I don't feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't feel anything. I talk to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to his baby mom like since I've been home. But I don't feel anything. I just,
and when you see the daughter, how do you feel when you see her?
I haven't seen her. She lives in Florida. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have anything to do with what her father did. Yeah, she doesn't have anything to do mm-hmm. with that. You can't hold kids accountable for mm-hmm. stuff that their parents do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't have an ill will towards.
And then your cousin, I'm sure the family is probably saying, hey, let's try to.
I've seen my uncle and my aunt since I've been home. They came up. That's my mom's brother.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first cousin. Yeah.
So how do they handle you?
Like nothing ever happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, just don't bring it up,
mm-hmm.
which again, they can't control what their son did.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's next for you, Dr. Angela?
I want my story. I want it turned into, I don't know if it's a series or what it is, but that's what I want.
And what do you think when someone watches your story, what is it that you want them to get from that?
Resilience.
Mm-hmm.
Resilience, like mm-hmm. no matter what you go through, no matter how hard it get, it's never over unless you're under the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it's over.
Because you came out
mm-hmm.
and you started your own nonprofit.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're still sticking to the mission that God has placed over your life, which is the reformation of children.
Right.
Right. You have not veered from that at all.
No. And my 9-to-5 was for the Bell Project, which that's a nonprofit who bond people out of prison who can't afford to bond themselves out. So my role in that is client support specialist. So I find resources for people who are getting out of jail, who have, you know, drug addictions and everything like that. Yeah. So that's I'm still sticking to the mission. And now too, I want to try to find funding to go into schools. I want to teach girls about hygiene. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Cause that's something I hear, that behind bars, that's probably one of the most atrocious things that I've heard, that what they allow women to have to go through behind bars is unimaginable.
Federal prison is a little different than state prison. So federal is more regulated, and federal prison, they'll give women sanitary napkins. They'll give them tampons. It wasn't always like that. Like a bill had to be passed for that as well. It's not as bad, but I just feel like a lot of women were not raised properly. Mm-hmm. And you can't fault them if they don't know.
They just don't know.
Yeah, a lot of women you wouldn't even believe don't know to wipe from front to back. Mm-hmm. They just mm-hmm. don't know, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why I feel like that's another mission that I want to take on to help our young girls. So, you know, so they know the right thing to do to be a woman. Because right. I'm not going to lie, being in jail, I used to be like, I'm surrounded by, these are some Vikings. You know, like women would actually come in from the kitchen, working in that kitchen, and get directly in your bed before going to get in the shower, you know, or you be outside and you come in and you lay in the bed and your outside clothes. And yeah, so I just that's something else I want to do.
I think the other thing too is just that they're just, no one's teaching these young girls anymore about how to be a woman. They're right. spending more time on how to be sexy, mm-hmm. but how to be a woman.
Right.
I don't think that anybody's having that conversation.
Yeah. So that's one of my next things that I want to do.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, I am so honored that you were able to take some time out, come down and talk to us.
Yeah.
This has been an amazing interview.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it too. Yeah, I enjoyed it too. Yeah.
And I think the thing about this interview that makes it so amazing is your ability to take full accountability. Because many times we'll try to find every other excuse. It was the system. It was my parents. It was this. It was that. And you clearly said, I came from a great home.
I did.
I had went to some of the best schools.
Right.
My parents provided for me, so I didn't have to go out in the street.
Nope.
I didn't have to, you know, really get with this guy, mm-hmm. but I chose to.
Right.
I didn't have to continue to sell for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, I wasn't ready to be released when I thought I wanted to be released.
Right. You have to be ready for that prayer. You have to be ready.
And you have to be able to take full self-accountability.
Right. I remember this interview that I was going to do, that had the title. They had put, I received 364 months because of my boyfriend. And I told him, I said, I'm sorry, y'all. I don't like the title. I'm like, it's okay. We could talk about it. Because it's public information. My case is, you know, public information. I was like, but I can't just put everything on him, because what I came to grips with, Ebony, about, I used to say, if they hadn't told on me, they testified against me. No. If you wasn't doing anything that you wasn't supposed to do, nobody would have had a reason.
You were the boss.
Yeah.
You primarily were leading them. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was your boyfriend. So when people read the story, they're automatically going to assume you were like a Kimba. Mm-hmm. You were the girlfriend. You were innocent. You had no idea.
Yeah.
You were being charged because you were affiliated, mm-hmm. not that you were making the play.
Right. Making the play. That's a good one. Yeah.
So I will say the accountability mm-hmm. that you held today is something that most people don't take full responsibility for. And also being able to have a true conversation around our justice system. Mm-hmm. We always hear it's broken, it's unfair, it's wrong, it's this, it's that. But having that conversation about real reformation is important. So I think I really want to thank you for coming out and having this conversation.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I was excited. I couldn't wait to like meet you in person, you know, because it's one thing to see somebody on social media, right, and to admire them, but then to be in the same, you know, space with them. Like, I admire what you do. I admire your work. I think you dope. You know what I mean? Then you pretty and dark skin, you know, dark skin chicks. We got to stick together.
We got to stick together, girl. We got to stick together.
Yeah, but I brought you something. So okay. I brought you a t-shirt. From the podcast.
Right. Oh, it's me and God versus whoever want to get humble. Yeah. Okay, I love it. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And
thank
I
you.
Brought you a copy of the book. I want to sign it for you, though, before I go.
Yes. And I wanna listen, sign it. That is fire.
Thank you.
That cover is everything.
Thank you.
Angela Wright, Pit to Palace mentality. Love it. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, everyone. And definitely thank you for tuning in for another episode of Coinology. We'll see you next time. Welcome to Coinology, the podcast.
You ain't getting no money if you constantly worried about what everybody else got to say. If you constantly got your eyes on what everybody else doing, you ain't getting no money. When it comes down to closing a deal, I get you done. Every single one.
Welcome to Coinology, the podcast.